coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America. This is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up, Hour 2, Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School. We were brought to you by the Mercado, Certified Piedmontese, Special Grades and Butcher Shop, 84th and Havelock, 30th and Yankee Hill, 85th and Andermatt, / Old Cheney, and 168th and Maple up there in the O. A lot going on. It's preseason action. Obviously, it's still, you know, you're knee-deep in training camp, but as you get closer to the first game, there's excitement, anxiety, but more importantly, there's pressure. And the pressure... there's obviously good pressure. I think it's a, you know, the old saying, it was a pressure is a privilege and all that stuff. And so it's just part of the emotions or whatever you want to describe it as what you go through when you're about to kick off a season. And it's no different than in, you know, here in Nebraska. And, you know, fortunately and unfortunately for the players and coaches, everything they say or do is dissected and, you know, talked about. You know, that's why it's Nebraska is a great job, because you get your only show in town and constant coverage, and you get the notoriety, you know, for both as players and as a coach. And then it could be frustrating or annoying at time that you always, you know, I wouldn't say always have to be on your P's and Q's, but everything that you say is evaluated, scrubbed over, all the way down to the ground. And so I think I think with the D-line coach and outside linebacker coach talks yesterday, and obviously Coach Butler, I mean, they're asking him. And then, you know, just any coach, man, you want to make sure you want to make sure your tackling's good. You want to make sure your communication's good and your physicality. And so that's probably one of the things he touched on.
Yes. Let me see if I can, here's the tackling quote from Nebraska defensive coordinator, John Butler.
The tackling piece obviously is something that I think is just never ending from now until the time you're done playing ball. Because obviously I think we had 3 or 4 live periods throughout the year, like scrimmages type things, and then the rest of it's thud. And then even in your tag off stuff, which we did a little bit today, you're just constantly preaching, running through, where are your eyes? So I think that's something that really throughout the whole year, but when you look at using the analogy of preseason football, you know, in the NFL, and then you look at the first 3 or 4 games of each year, the stuff that stands out is the tackling and the takeaways, right? The tackling and the lack of ball security, because, you know, quarterbacks haven't been hit, really ball carriers haven't been hit. So the team that's tackling better from a standpoint of the individual tackles plus population to the ball, I think is a huge thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty, you know, that's accurate. I mean, it's something that you got to work on collectively. You got to emphasize, put an emphasis on it. And then I'll say individually as a player, it's part of your craft. You got to work at it. Tackling is something that you got to take pride in as an individual, and you got to work on it strategically and with intention at least 2 or 3 times a week. I mean, every day in practice while you're doing it, but outside of that, you got to put some time into it every single week, every single day. Or just every single day you have scheduled.
What does that look like as a player? Extra work on that. What are the most important teaching points that maybe younger players would miss on that?
I mean, it kind of depends on where your weakness at, you know, weakness or what you want to get better at. I mean, it could be essentially.
What was it for you?
It kind of depends on the year.
Let's take it year by year. Okay, as a freshman year coming year, in, oh, you just freshman. Moved. You just moved to linebacker. Everything.
Well, that was for freshmen coming in. I was mainly getting bigger, faster, stronger, learning how to get off blocks. So a lot of time that I put in on, or extra time was, you know, getting on the sled, being physical there, getting off of that, and then, you know, hitting the popsicle stick, and then obviously work on running your feet.
Sophomore Jay Foreman, feet are wet. You're bigger, faster, stronger.
More of that. More of that. You never forget. You always go back to the basics. And then really just running your feet on contact and learning how to play with good leverage. Leverage to me is good pad level.
And then junior and senior Jay Foreman just showed up an hour before the game, said, "No, I'm good. I got this."
No, then it's more, you know, I mean, there's times where you go through a couple of practices and you feel like you're not, you know, hitting ball carries as crisp as you like, or as physical as you like. You got to have some self-awareness, and when you're in practice or after practice, some honest evaluation with yourself. If you're just going out there in practice and being okay with getting through practice and not really like dissecting every play, and not just and only dissecting the plays that you make them in practice, you're doing yourself a disservice, mm-hmm. and you're doing your teammates a bigger disservice. I mean, there's been times where I've tackled well, but it wasn't good enough for me. So then, you know, I always go back to this. First things first, you start off with your stance. It's alignment assignment, being aggressive. That precedes any good or bad tackle. That right there has nothing to do with physicalness, because that leads you to a faster and crisper, more clear read. It allows you to communicate more effectively, which allows you to play, you know, more freer, which allows you to be more athletic and explosive and all that other stuff. Then you get into technique stuff, right? How you're, you know, based on the play, how you're attacking the one or two guys that, you know, possibly can block you based on their physical traits and how they play as a player. Then you look at the running back. Okay, when can I, you know, when do I, you know, take a shot, or when do I got to kind of make sure that I'm grabbing cloth and getting him down to the ground? And then it also is schematics. But, you know, as far as working at it, it's a quickness thing. It's a leverage or pad level thing. And then an emphasis on once you get contact, you got to come up through your hips. And then obviously you got to run your feet. You got to run your feet. There's this, like, the funny thing about tackling though, Austin, is after the initial strike, and it could be a stalemate, there's like, it seems like it's a full second, but it's like a millisecond that you're, and this is crazy, I'm thinking about this now, is like all the things that go through your mind before you get contact, before you hit him, or while you're tackling.
And that's one of those, the game slows down things.
Yeah, it's like you see him, you know, you're thinking, okay, here he comes. Okay, and it's like, you know, the holes open and close so fast in the pros and in college. You see the guy coming out, you know, the play's coming your way. You see him out come blocking you. And then you're like, okay, you know, your tip might be pad level. You get off him and then boom, there he is. Then you're like, okay, I got to get my head across and I got to run my feet. And then once you hit him, then there's like a little quick set, run your feet. And then it's over. Hesitation.
Get you killed
and get your ankles broke.
Get your drug.
Right. Get your drug. Get you zigging. They're zigzagging. You still zigging. And it happens to the best of us. You're going to miss tackles as a player. It's like getting got. If you aren't playing, if you never got in the NFL or college, then you ain't playing hard enough. Because some of it, you're just playing reckless, but it's got to be controlled aggressive and aggressiveness and reckless. So, I mean, you just got to maybe just continue to hit the tackling sled or the tackling dummy. You got to maybe set. I used to set up like an obstacle course.
Ah.
Right. I wanted to work on foot quickness. I'd, you know, check a bag or two. I would work on my play entry. Then I would work on like my initial footsteps and then getting up with through this like hitting sled, ripping off, keeping my feet like choppy. You know, you're like a typewriter, and then exploding into the tackling dummy.
How much of your first step as a linebacker is just your initial normal human reaction time, and how much of it is you generally know what your first step is going to be based off film study and alignment?
Well, you'd like it to be a lot based off your film study and alignment. I think when you're an inside linebacker, I think you got to think, you know, quicker feet, and like you're like a boxer that's a really good jabs, like both hands. Like, then you go.
How many steps do you give yourself to properly diagnose before you have to have a decision made?
I match him, and I go through the triangle. And then most of the time, I kind of know where I'm going. And once you see it, you know, you got to hit it. And then you go from there. It's so much work that goes. That's why, like, even if you don't wear pads, you got to be mentally drained. Because you're so in tune to every single play, even when you're not in the the practice or the game, you're in there.
Well, and you're looking at, I mean, probably no less than seven guys most times, five linemen, running back, quarterback.
There's usually three.
On top of a tight end, potentially.
Based on the front, if you draw a front, and I know what the front's doing, that's why you got to know what everybody's doing. You narrow it down to two or three guys that can block you. Two guys play side, one guy backside. Based on whatever running play, and then obviously screen and all that other stuff. And then you know on the run, things can happen.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
You can. We used to call it rinse and replace. A guy gets like washed down into your gap. You got to replace him there. It's called playing football. It's the best thing.
And that is doing your job. Playing football.
The best thing Sam Cowart told me once when I was a rookie. He's like, don't leverage the block, leverage the ball. And that holds true even if you're taken on a block.
Because it's relative to the ball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't need to set the edge of you way out there by the sideline. You know what I mean? Throw that big dude out there. I got to make it play. That's why I was so mad. Reggie Herring lit me up one time when I against the Patriots when they were at a screen. Two linemen over there. Vic Fangio was like, you need to be outside of it. No, I don't.
No.
No. First of all, if I go outside, they're going to blow me up into the gate rate. Second of all, I gave the dude the dead leg. Got off into the second dude, made the tackle.
Made a play.
It was hell to high water, right?
So they're thinking you got away with making the wrong play. Well, but you did. Listen, you made the right play.
Vic, you way up there, okay? I'm down here in action.
How many snaps did Vic take at linebacker?
I don't know, but he's a hell of a coordinator. Listen, you way up there. Matter of fact, you just watched it again. I'm down here, and it comes time you got to just make a decision. Listen. There's two big linemen coming out there. There's nothing that there's not a right answer because it wasn't Gary. It was Kylie Wong blitz when he was supposed to be in the flat.
Oh, no.
So then therefore I'm out there. What are you going to do? I ain't going to run up there and get blocked. I'm going to try to stay alive.
Survival.
Yeah. Now his rebuttal would have been you do the job you're supposed to do, and then you go play football. It wouldn't have stretched out the play so much. There is truth to that. But
you made the tackle.
Yeah. But when I'm in a hook drop and I see two dudes out there, I don't think I got a lot of time to, hold on. Stop right there. Let me get outside so I can get
it. Oh, yeah. We got you, Jay. Yeah, we'll see you over there when we get there.
Yeah. But, you know, Vic was probably, he's always the coach. He's always right. But, yeah, I mean, that's part of the process that you go through is tackling. And then I think a big thing is practice habits. I think sometimes if you learn how to practice without pads, you've seen a lot. Look, you saw the Denver Broncos. The one thing I think people get the misconception about the Denver Broncos when they were really rolling, and I used to call them the way too real Denver Broncos because they were way too real. They were really physical, but they hardly ever practiced in pads. They practiced the right way. You practice with the tempo, pad level. You get after it with the same speed. Your body's fresh. I think with defense, for me, one of the things I learned how to over-exaggerate some of the things I needed. So like a swing change in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You go through what they say, 1,000 kind of reps of kind of mimicking what you're trying to do. You explode out of your break. You sprint up to them with the right leverage. We used to call it kill grass, which is the pitter pat, and then you explode into it, and you make sure you drop your hips on contact. And if you're tagging off or if you're thudding up, you go from there. But you're not gonna. But if you're playing, but if you're thinking like, oh, we're in half pads or shells, I can play high. I'll figure out the game.
You should probably play lower because you don't want to play high in pads.
Yeah, yeah. You always got to plan for that leeway.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like. If you ever watch golf and a guy says, oh, I gave you a club less than what you normally would hit because I know you're juiced up. I know you're going to hit that 8-iron farther than you normally would. So I'm giving you 7-hour distance with your 8-iron coming down the stretch.
Mm.
No different than football. You got to over-exaggerate it. And of course, like he said, until the season's over, you're never going to be satisfied with tackling. And that's 1,000% truth. You want to constantly harp on it, even if your team's tackling good. You want to constantly harp on it. You constantly want to make sure that the standard of effort is there, and then you want them to take it to heart and go out there and execute.
Maybe this is the wrong question to ask. Maybe you know where it's coming from, though. Obviously, you want to make 100% of your tackles, but if you're going to grade out, you know, the NFL level as a, you know, above average to great tackler, what percentage of the time are you making a tackle? When you have an opportunity.
Me?
Just a generic NFL player.
Oh, a linebacker should make it 90% of the time. Get him down.
Okay.
Get him down. I think
is that different for DBs?
They look, man. They don't. It's such a variance of what guys that want to hit or not. You know, now I think guys, they'll go in there and we'll call it, it's called shooting your shot. And coaches or coordinators would be okay with it because you shot your shot. When I played, guys took pride in not missing tackles and making every tackle that you possibly could within the scheme. So I think it's different. So I think a lot of these kids that kind of just play, oh, I missed a tackle. All right, I got another play because I know I'm playing. I'll get another one. And then they get in the red zone. They're like, all right, we better tighten up. Versus we didn't want to get you in the red zone.
Because that's still probably 3 points.
Or the touchdown.
Or
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So I think it's just a difference in mentality and so forth and so on. We got anybody else?
Let's see here. We can. I know you like linebackers. Let's hear about linebackers from Nebraska defensive coordinator John Butler.
Obviously, the single digit thing here is a tremendous honor for everybody, 0 through 9, because like we have coaches have nothing to do with it. It's 100% based on the opinion and the respect that your fellow players have for you, which ultimately in football, we're trying to get these guys to play as hard as they can, as physical as they can, and execute at a high level and do it for each other. That ultimately is the kind of the bonding formula. The fact that you're doing it for your teammates, you're not out there playing for yourself. So if you then get voted as one of the 10 players to wear a single digit, I think that's just a testament of what the players think of them. And with Vincent, obviously he went from 1 to 9, which meant he was revoted into that capacity as opposed to just keeping his number one. So I really believe that any of those players that have been voted into that position that then accepted that number, it just, they should feel great about how their teammates think of them. And then it is a tremendous responsibility to then uphold that, because now we're looking to you, you know, to be the ones that lead our defense or lead our team, so to speak. So I would assume that if I was voted to get a single digit, I'd wear it, and I would wear it with pride, and I would wear it knowing that every single day I showed up in this building, I've got to lead and play with a level of effort and physicality and execution that's uncommon.
Obviously, you name drop Vincent Shavers there, Jay, but also Javon Wright in that conversation as a single-digit linebacker.
Yeah, they got to get the party started. I mean, you got to do it a lot of times when you physically probably aren't feeling the best. That's what he's saying. He said every day you got to bring it. Every game you got to bring it. Mm-hmm. You voted on by your teammates. You do. Listen, the worst thing, you want to know what my biggest fear was? It wasn't like Larry Allen or like Brennan Stye or like Aaron Taylor and all, or like Corey Schlesinger. No, that wasn't my biggest fear. My biggest fear was walking into the training table as a me and having guys think like that dude isn't that good, or that dude doesn't play hard, or he's not up to standard. That was my biggest fear. I mean, it drove me to like, and it's a good fear. It's a good peer pressure, because that's, you're invested. You care about your teammates. You care. Nobody knows you better than your teammates, and nobody really kind of knows who's the guy that like they can trust more than your team, ideally more than your teammates. Now, if it's like a popularity contest, then you get in some trouble. But I think like these guys that have those single numbers, I don't really know off the top of my head who they are. You guys come Thursday, whenever we play, was it Thursday? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like 8 o'clock, it's got to be on. Mm-hmm. And it's not, it's on the field, it's off the field, it's in the classroom, it's in the community, it's in the weight room, it's in the locker room, it's in the meeting room. But come Thursday, yeah, I know school starts Monday. That doesn't count. Okay.
No, hey, you ain't go to school, play school.
Hey, Dennis LeBlanc.
See me speaking, Cardale Jones.
Hey, Dennis LeBlanc, mad as heck is me right here. Listen, I don't care about this word first week of school. It's on.
Football season, Dennis.
Whoever those 10 are, it's got to be on. And it's not just the pageantry is over. It's on. You lead the way. You got a bunch of new dudes that just got here. You got McCullough that just got here. Mm-hmm. You got Nwaeri just got here. Law firm just got here. Well, you know, Rocco and those guys play. But you guys got to be the bell cow. Dane Key's single dude. But all those guys, you got to get busy. Mm-hmm. All game long. When it comes time to it, when it comes down to it, excuse me, and you face some adversity, those guys got to step up and rally the troops. I mean, there's some other guys, but, you know, yeah.
Well, we know you're always going to take it as a linebacker because.
But, you know, Coach Butler was right. He said, listen, those are the guys that it can't be. You just can't be one of the guys.
No. I mean, yeah, you have, what, four single digits behind you in the defensive backfield? Buford, Hartzog, Singleton, and now Sierra Wright as well.
You can't be just a bunch of guys. You just can't.
You still got to take charge.
You can't be guys that just do. You can't blend in. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing wrong with it. So you got voted on by your teammates. So you got to perform for your teammates. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, come back. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School. We'll holler at you in a second.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Second segment, 4 o'clock hour, Jay Foreman, Austin Orman. Did some Husker talk. Obviously, it was good audio there from Coach Butler. Dove in some tackling, some of the things you deal with as a coach and as potentially as a player as you get through this thing that we call two-a-days or fall camp. But we want to pivot from that. I think, Austin, I sent you the article of – they had a, I guess, a poll of – the five coaches that are on the hottest hot seat. I mean, it was interesting, man. I mean, because obviously Billy Napier is on there. I have to look. I think Brian Kelly's on there. I know Brian Kelly's on there. Mm-hmm. He stay on the hot
seat. I think Venables was there.
Red Venables is on there. What's my man from USC?
Lincoln Riley.
Lincoln Riley was on there.
He's got a huge buyout, though.
And the one that is kind of, I guess, in the coaching world, might be set up for failure, Mike Gundy. Homeboy, alum.
20-year stalwart.
Quote machine. Took a pay cut. Mm-hmm. Remember, it was a whole thing where it kind of was down to the 23rd hour whether they were going to get a contract done. Because they felt like they could fire him for cause. Mm-hmm.
They were not able to.
Yeah, so essentially he's on back. a one-year prove it. And he's had to dive into more of the portal. He's had to take a pay cut and put it into recruiting and assistance and building a recruiting department. So those are some pretty good coaches. I mean, if you rank them here, according, I'm assuming these coaches are ranked, right? And number one on the hottest hot seat is Brett Venables. Number two is Lincoln Riley. Number three is Mike Gundy. Number four is Billy Napier. Five, Brian Kelly. I think number four, Billy Napier being at number four, I think is the oddest one. And Lincoln Riley being number two. Brett Venables, that's sure. Mm-hmm. And it's by all assumptions, they're going to have a better year this year than last year. And then Lincoln Riley, it's weird that he's that high because of what they did to get him,
mm-hmm.
how they got him, and his bio. So that lets you know that, according to this, people in USC are not happy.
I do wonder what the sourcing is on that. If there is reporting, you know, done by talking to Jen Cohen at USC. I mean, she's in a huge spot. Yeah. Paid a lot to get him. You yank him away from, you know, being Bob Stoops' successor. To go from Oklahoma to USC, blue blood to blue blood. That's a crazy move. Paid him a lot of money to do it because you had to. In terms of performance, yeah, no, hasn't lived up, you know, to everything that they thought he would be. I would say he's probably been better than Venables. Close.
Well, you had Caleb Williams in the first year there. They were doing some things. The last year was kind of a dud. I think,
because the first year they made the bowl, they got beat by Tulane.
Yeah. I would say no.
You take Venables over Riley right now?
Yeah, because Lincoln Riley had been a head coach before.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He took a lot of Brett Venables players from Oklahoma.
Well, what do you mean? Because Venables came from Clemson.
Yeah, but then when he left.
Oh, he took players that Venables couldn't have.
Yeah, from Oklahoma. Gotcha. So. So essentially, Spencer Rattler leaves. So you don't, mm-hmm. you start without a quarterback. You would like to say, okay, at least Spencer Rattler would have stayed.
He did not.
Right. And then because you got kind of the guy that quote unquote beat Caleb Williams out. Caleb Williams beat him out. He gone. And then Spencer Rattler is over in
South Carolina.
Now mm-hmm. you're starting at zero and you're kind of getting the job secondhand. Did Oklahoma really think? Because everybody thought that he was going to LSU. He said mm-hmm. no. Oklahoma was like, cool, we got him for another year. And we got Caleb.
Right.
Not so fast, my friend.
5377 says, why no Luke Fickell in the top five?
Bio.
USC's got more money. They also have the bigger buyout. You know.
And they have more money. So it's easier for USC to come up with the money than versus Wisconsin.
So is next year the hot seat year for Fickell? Is 1 year make that big a difference? Do you still have 2 years before you start thinking about it?
Next year is probably make or break. Because this year, that schedule is serious.
Is it ever?
Yeah.
If you go into this year.
I think he's like Tom Allen was in Indiana. It's got to be aesthetically pleasing. Mm-hmm. Where you can really say, we've done this. We've improved. Have an upset victory.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe get to that six wins.
Last year's team only wins two against the schedule. Maybe three.
Yeah.
We got them to five. Could have been six,
right? Yeah, it's got to be aesthetically pleasing.
I'm not sure Wisconsin and aesthetically pleasing have gotten together in a long time.
It can't be blowout city,
no.
And you can't not look competitive. You have to have an identity on the offensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, you know, generally you can just dice it up. You know, it's an effort. We got to cover and all that, and you can kind of formulate that pretty easy. Offensively, mm-hmm. they have been.
Lost in the wilderness.
Yeah, certainly. They've been lost in space.
The one that I want to hit on here, Jay, though, is Mike Gundy. Because I really thought with Texas and Oklahoma dipping for the SEC, I thought Oklahoma State was in really good position. Gundy'd been there. A lot of talent. That's no disrespect to Kyle Whittingham, Utah. Really good coach, you know, coming in from the Pac-12 wing. Arizona and Arizona State should have plenty of talent available to them at all times. TCU, same sort of thing. But I thought Oklahoma State would have been in that conversation more consistently, you know, but the fact that they've ceded some of that ground to Iowa State, that's a credit to Matt Campbell.
Yeah.
I think you feel more confident about the direction for Kansas State under Klieman.
Yeah.
And even Kansas, yeah. Right? It's still Kansas, right? Not a perfect year last year for Leipold as Jalen Daniels up and down and injured, but Kansas is more in that conversation at the top. Colorado is more in that conversation at the top than Oklahoma State.
BYU.
Was. BYU.
Yeah, I
as
mean,
well.
I think you Oklahoma State, once Oklahoma left and Texas left, you'd be like, oh, this is our time. Mm-hmm. They look worse.
Yeah.
I mean,
with all that returning production, Ollie Gordon back, and they do that?
It looked like they had a lot of time on their hands, and they believed the hype. Kind of like we talked about with the Colts earlier. You're in a small little town, and not small. Indy's not a small town, but you're the
smaller market for the NFL.
Yeah, smaller market. Same with
Stillwater.
Stillwater. Mm-hmm. And Oklahoma's gone. So the big brother, they're gone. And then you kind of gain some fanfare because they left. Mm-hmm. And you're riding high, riding up and down the road to Oklahoma City and going
Tulsa
to casinos and stuff, riding high. And you figured like you're going to rinse and repeat because that Bedlam game was pretty good. Now that game's gone. Now we're going to really run it. Then here comes Colorado. Here comes, like, you know, Kansas is always just like a thorn. Well coached. And then here's Kansas.
Well, they had the better quarterbacks at those places. Same with Iowa State.
Then here comes Arizona State with limited resources. The dude just, didn't he just say he want an indoor facility?
Mm-hmm. He wants an indoor facility. Yeah. He doesn't have one.
He said it's hot. He's like,
in Tempe, Arizona.
Yeah. He said, man, how many games we got went to get an indoor facility? He'll be on to his next job by the time they're building it. But what I'm saying, so you felt like, okay, we can run it. And then they probably were telling themselves, oh, BYU and Utah got to adjust us. Well, BYU and Utah came down, or at least BYU came down, busting your head open to the white meat.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had some issues with the powers that be, obviously, over the 20 years. They had been waiting and lurking.
For this moment.
All my life. You know they had some built-up animosity. I can't wait. And they almost had him out the door. Almost had him out the door. It was breaking news down there that they kept him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think he's in a one-year prove it. He's kind of – I wouldn't say he's like Kurt Ferentz because Kurt Ferentz continues to win. But I think when Kurt Ferentz – when they brought in a new AD essentially specifically to fire his son, that's kind of like the same deal.
That and the Fran McCaffrey thing.
Yeah.
You know, that was why that AD was brought in. Handle the Ferentzes, handle men's basketball. Don't let women's basketball fall by the wayside. Obviously, there's a changing of the guard there as well. But that's where Oklahoma State baseball's in good hands. They're a NCAA tournament team they've hosted recently. Basketball just got a new coach. They were floundering in mid for the better part of 4 or 5 years, bringing a new coach. Not a big splash hire. Now that Mike Boynton was before, but Steve Lutz coming in from Western Kentucky didn't exactly light the world on fire. So that puts, I think, even more pressure on Gundy. Because if baseball is going to be your best sport in the Big 12,
and we're going to cut back. Well, yeah, then we're cutting way back on everything.
Yeah.
Basketball's getting a pass, and basketball will get some more money. But I also think this is the thing, just like with Tom Allen and Mike Gundy and Luke Fickell, but more or less, you know, with Mike Gundy, it's aesthetic. Aesthetics are a big deal. But then also, when Tom Allen was at Indiana, magically, when they hired Kirk Cignetti, they got an influx of NIL money, and they found a way to pay him.
Doesn't that always crack you up? Like, why don't we just give the new coach the money, or the old coach the money? You know, see what he can do with those resources. guy who's had a track record of success, and you say, oh, I need a little bit more money. Just give the guy more money. Why does it take the new exciting splash hire?
They probably figured to get more money. Tom Allen, you know, maybe isn't the head coach, and we need some. I don't know what they were. I mean, obviously it worked out, but yeah, where they had no NIL support, then, and that's obviously, you know, based on the state of the program. I think Indiana is a byproduct of having that successful season, which essentially they were an Iowa version of Big Ten champs, COVID Big Ten champs, and you had some legendary, you were in their football thing, had legendary performances that got them there.
Yeah,
Michael Penix goes to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
They lose the two receivers. Then they lose all their McFadden and all those guys that created havoc with the turnovers and led the nation in turnovers and turnover margin. All that talent is gone, and you can't replace that as readily as Ohio State. Like, nobody really is worrying about Ohio State's defense, and they really have a lot of missing parts. But they just, like, you know what? They get the benefit of the doubt, and they've recruited and developed. Indiana, your starters are – there's a difference.
Yeah.
And then you continue along and you're not able to replace that, it really put Tom Allen in a bad spot. But then they knocked it out of the park with Cignetti. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Gundy, how they play, and if they're successful, he's still there. But if they're not, what does this new guy get that Gundy wasn't getting moving forward? Or do you go the under-the-radar hire like they did with basketball and kind of build it up from the ground up?
Oklahoma State is not like a huge power player in college athletics, but it's a good enough, respectable enough program. They should be able to get someone, right? If they want to go get their version of Lance Leipold, that should be doable, right? They're not going to poach from an SEC job unless it's a coordinator. Would they be able to pull, I don't know, like Boise State's guy? You know, I think he's an alum, so he's probably not leaving. Yeah. But could you pull Boise's guy? If Mullen has a couple good years at UNLV, could you get him?
You maybe could get, what's the dude that just left South Dakota State to go to Washington State?
Oh, yeah.
You could get him.
Yeah.
Just trying to think. I mean, you could get a coach like that. I think Oklahoma State is a unique place to coach, though, as well.
Or would they maybe be inclined to take a swing on like a Tom Allen? Hey, you want one last coaching gig? Get us back on the road to stability and
maybe Jim Knowles.
Knowles, ooh.
Well, because of how he left.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. I think Oklahoma State isn't as much as they got to hire like homegrown like Oklahoma, but I think it takes a. That's where fit comes in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be willing. You know, you have to know where to look for talent. You got to be able to build a program. You got to be able to kind of come in with that Kirk Cignetti. I'm bringing my quarterback. I'm bringing my running back, a couple of DBs and all that. And then that's how you make up that ground that was lost, you know, obviously in this case by Mike Gundy. So anyways, we'll see what happens. A lot going on. We're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about a little preseason action last night. It was the battle of the stay-in holdouts last night, Bengals and the Commanders. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, we'll be right back.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, quick segment before we turn it over to Teammates Tuesdays. And I think it's Ashton and Des Moines coming in and doing their thing with Teammates. Great organization, obviously, started and led by Coach Osborne. Des Moines and Ashton is taking it to a whole new level. What's been taken to a whole new level is the holdout length of Trey Hendrickson and my man Scary Terry McLaurin, both their teams respectively, squared off last night. It's interesting that at this point you're like a week or two away and you don't have your number one receiver as far as the Commanders in camp, or he's in camp but not signed. And the guy that's led the league in sacks 2 years in a row, it's also a weird situation because they have agreed on the number. It's the guaranteed money. Mm-hmm. And that'll tell you everything about negotiations in the NFL. You want the guaranteed money, because that's only the money that really matters.
Yeah. Because the average value of it per year is in line.
Yeah.
But like you said, guaranteed.
Because that doesn't mean anything if you have a down year, which you most likely would have because he hasn't been in camp or been able to, you know, practice what you, you know, I think he's obviously been working out. But now they can say, okay, now you're not worth that second year or that third year. And so that's where you have guys that are held out this long. Whereas the Commanders, I think they like Terry McLaurin. I don't think they love him like a number one.
They love him, yeah, not to that price, and they trust Jaden Daniels to elevate whoever they put in that role.
And that could set Jaden Daniels up for epic failure. Because why? It's the sophomore slump, and it's not by anything of his doing. It's that they have a whole year of film on you. Your number one option isn't there. Yes, you got Debo, but they're two totally different receivers.
Debo ordered a couple number ones.
Yeah, yeah, with extra cheese. And you got the you know, what they say, you want a medium or large, you got the large. And then obviously you got to think, Zach Ertz is another year older. Now you're trying to get rid of one of your leaders in the locker room in Robinson. Bobby Wagner's a year older, even though still very productive. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have, your guy on the outside that made some huge plays, game winning plays for you last year, signed. And it's getting close to camp, and no different than Michael Parsons. It's no different than obviously Trey Hendrickson, and no different than obviously speaking about Terry McLaurin. It is not a fun time for those young men and their agents, and then obviously their football teams.
Because you can only assume those guys actually wouldn't be out there playing football. You know, they don't want to be sitting on their butt at home waiting around for news, right? Sure, they're out at training camp, maybe not participating, like you said. They're around the team.
They go home during. Did you see the video? Bobby Wagner was walking to practice. Terry McLaurin was leaving because he was at meetings. And he's like, I ain't staying out here practicing. I'm out. He probably went somewhere and got a workout in. So it's great that the stay-in is happening, right? You like to stay in to start, to be at the start of training camp, and you're trying to work out the little details.
Mm-hmm.
The contract is pretty much done.
You can say, oh, you're a veteran. You know, we're going to give you a couple days off anyways.
Right. Or you just, okay, until the contract is finished, I'm going to stay in.
Mm-hmm.
God forbid these dudes are staying in dorms. Just imagine that you're doing the stay in. And I mean, granted, you're going to do that because you don't want to get fined. But I think Cincinnati is trying to get Trey Henderson to sign a Cincinnati Bengals friendly deal like they did with Stewart. It lets you know they really don't think they're going to be that good. And they overspend on offense. And then I think with the Commanders, I think they like Terry McLaurin as their number one receiver at their price. And that's probably below market value.
Which is where you have to understand how deals work and that they're a compromise, right? Because every player wants 100% of the salary cap. They know they can't get it, you know?
Yeah,
and every owner wants to pay them, you know, $300,000 on rookie scales for all their whole career. And that's not realistic.
No.
So you have to understand that, you know, you got to meet in the middle at some point, right? Players aren't going to get everything. Ownership isn't going to get everything. So that's where I think it's the tactful negotiation, figuring out what is really important. You know, for Trey Hendrickson, it's been obvious the whole time. It's the guarantees, right? Terry McLaurin, maybe it's not so obvious what exactly he's seeking, right? Is it the $66 million that I think his camp put out? Or is that just the front? This is my number, meet it. Or what other condition could be met that he re-signs and he plays for, say, you know, 60
yeah.
million or 58 million, something to that degree.
Yeah, I think he's been around enough and been overlooked enough and been consistent enough. And obviously in the locker room, a big influence, obviously, you know, in the locker room, considering that when the new ownership group came in, he was one of the players that they brought to the press conference. So
yeah.
I'm sure he's not trying to, you know, break the bank, but he wanted to make sure that he gets paid what he thinks he's worth. And, you know, it goes back and forth, but it can, you know, negotiations, the way the NFL negotiates, you hear them say stuff about you as a player, and then you got to go play for them, you know? And so I think with him, the biggest thing he's looking for is the respect, and the respect came from, or the lack of it in his mind, the timing or the lack of timing is taken, or how much time is taken for him to get paid.
Mm.
So there now, this is more of a Dan Quinn thing once he's signed, but the biggest thing, he has to get signed, because I think Dan Quinn can mend those type of things, and that's what
part of why you hired him. Probably
part of why you hired him. Team building, he does a really good job. His personality and is infectious, and that's part of the reason why they played so well last year. But unfortunately for them, they're not signed, and so unfortunately for everybody else, our Tuesday 2 hours is over. We're turning it over to Ashton and teammates Jay Foreman, Austin Norman, Old School. We'll holler at you tomorrow.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.